Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
From one of the most unusual errands that I've ever been a part of.
Let's just say that when we went through all the stuff that we had at home, one of the additional things was a random tooth.
To one of the most unusual passengers I've ever driven.
I'm gonna get out here.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, for real.
Okay, let me turn this.
What's your name, by the way?
Anthony.
Sorry.
Anthony?
Yeah.
Matt.
Yeah.
All right. Smells like wood.
To another passenger with an unusual belief system.
Deep in denialism, like actually reading about it and realize that I just am a nihilist. I don't think that anything matters, just existentially.
It was not a typical experience out on the streets of Chicago this week, as I welcome you to another episode of Backseat Rider, the podcast where I drive a Lyft and whoever ends up in the backseat of the car becomes the cast of this show. And the thought starter for this week, it being the season of giving, I asked all my riders to tell me about the most thoughtful gift that they'd either given or received.
It could be anything.
Boy, that's a good question.
Drove this man home from a neighborhood bar early evening. And the sun was already down, so it wasn't very easy to see. And I think I might have confused his gray hair for being sandy blonde or something like that, because I was shocked when he told me that he was 51 years old. He looked way younger than that. And like me, he is a journalist here in Chicago.
One of the most thoughtful presents I ever received. And it made me feel very humble because, I don't know, I wish I could be that good at giving presents. It was several years ago, a very dear friend of mine gave me two gifts, or three actually, three. And the first one was a Holga camera. Holga is a toy camera made in Japan. It was kind of a knockoff thing from, I don't know, the 80s maybe. Uses an odd format of film that mostly doesn't exist anymore. But at one point in time, I think maybe in the 90s, or no, it was when Al Gore was running for president, so it would have been 2000. There was a fellow who was in the White House correspondence pool, and he won like picture of the year by shooting a picture of Al Gore with a Holga. And it's this tiny... not tiny, it's actually not tiny. It's kind of blocky plastic camera. It looks like something you got out of a five and dime store. Yeah. And you put this roll of film in it. There's 12 shots, and that's all you got. And you don't know, there's not instant gratification. And so that was, I really enjoyed that gift. That was just gift number one. Now, you know, today, now you can, there's essentially like a Holga feature on certain iPhone photo programs where like the red light comes in from like the, you know, it's been exposed because it's a crappy plastic camera and the light comes through, so it's kind of ruined a little bit by that.
It's like a filter almost.
Yeah, it's a filter. Yeah, exactly. It's a filter now. But before it was just, that was, you had to buy a Holga to get that feature.
To get that look.
Yeah, to get that look. And a guy won this big time, you know, photojournalism award with a Holga, with a toy camera.
The photo he's talking about, it's worth a Google search. It was taken by a guy named David Burnett and landed in first prize in the 2001 White House News Photographers Association contest. And the photo shows Al Gore at a speaker's podium from this dramatic low angle, and it kind of looks otherworldly. But back to his answer, though, that Holga camera, which, by the way, is spelled H-O-L-G-A, that was just item one of the gift set that he's talking about.
Gift number two was this great book by the Talking Head singer David Byrne called The Bicycle Diaries. Wonderful book about life in general. Great artist, David Byrne. Just a really meaningful book. Hardcover, nice, like maroon cover, gold lettering. And then the third one was a bottle of High West rye whiskey. High West is, of all places, it's a distillery in Utah. And it's the only ski-in distillery in the United States.
Oh, really?
So in the middle of Mormon country, there's this distillery.
Where you ski in.
You can ski into the distillery. And they make really good whiskey.
So this is like a hat trick gift.
It was the ultimate hat trick, in my opinion.
Who was the individual, and why were these particular things given to you on this particular milestone?
So, I was turning 45. A good friend who knew enough about my, you know, various interests, myriad interests. I don't know, imagery, music, but also the written word. And then, I don't know, love of fine brown liquor, I guess. Uh-huh. So it was, I don't know, it was just like a meaningful gift. And it was unexpected in the sense that we're good friends, but I didn't think, like, I don't know, I didn't expect that level of a trifecta of gifts from that person. I didn't feel like I deserved that necessarily from her. It was really, I don't know, I think I said at the beginning, it was humbling because she got me in a way that I wasn't expecting anyone to get me. So that was really cool.
Are you still friends with this?
I am. Yeah, and I've never... That's one of those things where, like, after the fact, like, you want to somehow... I don't know.
Repay them in some
Yeah, way. Yeah. But you don't want it to be forced.
Correct.
And so... nothing about what she did was forced. And that was really cool. It was just... These were things that she thought that I would like. And she gave them to me without any kind of... I don't know. Anything really expected in return.
That's really cool. Now, was this a romantic interest?
That's a good question. I mean... No, yes, I think, is more like it, with the answer. I think it was more like a deep... I think in retrospect, we were very good friends, and she was going through a very rough time in her life, and for whatever reason, I guess I was a person who could listen to her. I don't know. Pick her up when she was down, that kind of stuff. It didn't seem that difficult for me. And I think in some respects that was like some kind of, like, how can I repay you kind of thing, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe you've already, speaking of repaying, which we were just talking about, maybe you've already done the repaying that you were talking about.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean? Maybe you paid it forward in that situation. Do you remember what she was going through? Again, this is anonymous, so...
Yeah, no, I do. And it was just, you know, it was a big life transition for her. And so I think I had been through something similar myself. And so I saw how... I don't know. I just saw that she was having difficulty navigating it and feeling like she was... That everyone that was important to her, or that felt that she was an important person in their life, she didn't want to feel like she was letting them down. And what I was trying to tell her was that you're not letting them down. You're, if you're stronger in your own life, that's going to be stronger for everyone else.
What was the transition?
Oh, divorce.
Ah.
Yeah.
And that's something that you've
experienced? I've been through that. And so it's, I think you feel like a lot of, not only regret sometimes, but it's also like, if there are children involved or whatever, are you somehow letting them down? And you don't want them to feel in any way that, I don't know, that you're not there for them.
Right. And that's always a touchy thing because the instinct is probably to feel like, oh my gosh, this is a failed marriage, I failed my family. But the truth is that I agree with what you said earlier, that if you're not doing what you need to do to make sure that you're happy yourself, you're not going to be of service to anyone.
Yeah, I never understood the idea, and this is even before I got divorced, the concept of you should just stick together for the kids, you know, whatever else like this. This is the most out of the blue kind of thing. But you remember when Bob Dylan's son, Jacob Dylan, was big at one point?
Yes, with that song, One Headlight.
Exactly. So he had that, like, two songs in that one record, the Wallflowers, right?
Yes.
Jacob Dylan. And so, there, you know, he was big enough at that time that there was a Sunday New York Times profile of Jacob Dylan. And I remember reading it, and what was so interesting is what the only thing I really remember about the profile is they asked him something about, you know, how he reacted to his parents getting divorced. And he said, you know, I never felt unloved. My parents, both of them, said to me, look, you know, we just got to a point where we could not be together, but our priority always was that we love you and that we're here for you. Mm. And that just, I don't know, of all things, Jacob Dylan.
The next morning, this was Monday, I hopped into the car and I immediately got a ride request from Lincoln Square. And when I pulled up to this residential block, it was full of brick and graystone two flats, a woman hopped in who looked to be in her late 30s. She was wearing a stocking hat which completely covered her hair and zero makeup.
Parents are divorced. My dad's down in Florida. My mom is mostly in Florida. My sister's in-laws are mostly in Florida. So she's kind of alone in Ohio, and I'm kind of alone here.
By she means her sister, who was on the receiving end of this woman's most meaningful gift, which was the gift of her time. About 5 years ago, my passenger picked up her entire life out in California to move to Ohio to help her sister raise her three young children.
Like, the oldest wasn't even four yet when she had the youngest, so she was just having a hard time, so and they had extra space, and so I kind of like just packed up and moved out there when my niece was like a month and a half old, and I stayed out there for 2 years, and you know, I eventually kind of had my own little place out there and worked a little bit, but yeah, the primary point of going out there was just to like help her with the kids, help her raise them, just be there for them. I still try to go out there as often as I can to just spend time with them. You know, it's like they have money, they have stuff, they have things, but and you know, I got to the point where the kids are like, when I go visit, they'll be like, what'd you get me? And I'd be like, me, you have time, you know. And now they've learned, like, when I come to visit, yeah, I might give them a little book or a little, you know, thing to draw with, but you know, they have, you know, tons and tons of toys and monetary stuff, and it's like I give myself, I give my time, I give my love, I give, you know, my, you know, my imagination. I don't know. I just...
And they're probably too young to know that you kind of put your life on hold for a couple of years.
Yeah, they
in
don't...
In a way for them.
Yeah, they don't know. I mean, the youngest just turned 5, and they still remember me living there. In fact, whenever they would have, because they moved a couple of times, and whenever they would have a spare room, that's, you know, that's Auntie's room. That's Auntie's room.
We were headed to her job as a librarian, and that's a career my passenger has had her entire adult life. And as we were turning onto Lakeshore Drive, she said that gift of her own time, in the end, turned out to be a gift to herself.
Kind of gave me a sense of purpose to life. You know, I'm single. I don't have kids. I don't really have much family. I have a couple of friends, but they're off living their own lives. So it really gave me like almost a reason to live, I'd say, honestly, sometimes like a purpose, just that sense of, you know, love. I mean, you know, I haven't had much love in my life, honestly, to be frank. I've never had a boyfriend. I've never really had, you know, it's been years since I had like a best friend. So they gave me a sense of life and love. And, you know, when I feel the worst, I think of them.
After I dropped her off at the library where she works, the day took the first in a series of unusual turns, starting with this next passenger, a city employee that I drove from the South Loop to his office downtown.
Yeah, so I just came from home, dropped my very anesthesia'd fiancé off at home.
His fiancé, who just a couple hours earlier had her wisdom teeth pulled.
And I realized that I needed to go back to the dental office because by accident they had given us someone's, I don't know if it was a tooth they had just recently removed or exactly what it was, but let's just say that when we went through all the stuff that we had at home, one of the additional things was a random tooth that had come back from the dentist's office. And so I am now heading back to work from the dental office after dropping off said spare tooth, which went home with me by accident. And a day that I thought was probably going to start at about 9 a.m. now looks like it's starting at about noon. And that's okay, but I guess never a dull moment, right?
Well, you've done your good deed for the day because now said tooth presumably will go back to his or her rightful owner.
That's the idea. And the best part about it is, so they, you know, I noticed this thing. I wasn't sure what it was really. It looked actually more like a mouth guard. It wasn't until you look closely at it that you realize there's a tooth stuck in it too. But they called me up when I was at the pharmacy to let me know that they thought I had taken something home by accident. And the best part about it was that they were talking to me as they had the other person basically like in the office. And so they're kind of having that like, the phone's up next to my ear, but I'm talking to the other person moment. And they're like, what do you want him to do with your tooth? You know, and I'm sitting on the other end of the phone saying, you know, hey, this isn't my problem. Like, I'm happy to be the good guy here and bring it back. But, you know, I was kind of like, I don't know that I should be in a negotiation right now about, you know, the tooth coming back. You guys gave me the tooth by accident. I'm happy to bring it back. But they were, like, trying to say, like, you know, she could wait here for the next 20 minutes if you can bring the tooth. And I'm like, I don't know. I'll do my best, but...
Why did she want the tooth?
That's a very good question. To be honest, I after getting that phone call and realizing that it was not just a mouth guard, but also a mouth guard with a tooth stuck in it, I then kind of resolved myself to not look very closely at the package that I was carrying. But I can only assume that it's needed for some dental procedure that's potentially happening now or in the not too distant future. I have no idea. But I think you're right, man. Maybe I did do my good deed for the day or something like that. I brought back the tooth. So I don't know. Hoping for a good afternoon.
This marked the first time that I've ever been part of a mission to transport body parts. And as a bonus, there was just enough time to pose my question of the week.
Can you think of the most thoughtful gift you've either given or received?
Yeah, that's a really good one. The most thoughtful gift that I've received is my fiance made a yearbook of sorts that kind of recapped our relationship. And went through, like, a bunch of old emails that we had sent each other at different points. And basically kind of look through like the archive of our life, so to speak, and put it in almost like a yearbook with like different kind of unique moments. It was chronological, but it wasn't like stale. You know, it wasn't just like, and here's what we did in year one or year two. It was like funny, unique moments with pictures. And it's now like a book that we'll like go back and look at sometimes just because it's like, oh God, remember this or remember that.
It's funny. It's those little things that bring back the memories.
There's nothing to do with the value.
Yeah. Like, so is there an example of something she put in there that kind of is emblematic of this yearbook of sorts?
Yeah, she sent me a very long email when we were very early in our relationship, when we were long distance, and she had sent me just this really kind of powerful note that kind of laid out for her, you know, basically kind of we were trying to figure out kind of whether or not we were worth it, like whether or not we were worth making the effort for with our distance. And she just sent me a very long note that was the subject of the email is here's why we're worth it. And it was something that just kind of changed us, I think, in a really different way. It was like I had met someone who saw commitment in a different kind of sort of lens than I think what I had been used to. And so anyway, make a long story short, you know, that was probably the most touching part of it.
I was still in the loop when I got a ride request from LaSalle Street. So that's in the heart of the financial district. I pulled up to the corner of Madison and LaSalle, and this friendly-looking guy in business clothes hopped in off the curb for a ride to the north side. He's an attorney. And lucky for me, he recognized me from the video that I posted of myself quitting my previous job. So here we go with his most thoughtful gift.
I started dating my wife right in the middle of, like, what I call, like, the time of your life when you're going to a wedding every, like, other week. And so we started dating, and actually that was one of the first things that I asked her to come with me officially as a couple, is to one of my best friend's weddings when I was standing up, so she was going to have to be alone and, you know, in the crowd. And it was a big deal for her to come and, you know, kind of suffer through that as a new relationship. So I started saving all of our cards, like our place table cards, and from weddings and, you know, events and gatherings. And after about, I'd say, 7 years of these, I had about probably 60 of them, all different styles. And I took them to a scrapbooking store and had them make a collage of all of the place cards from everything we had been to together for the last 7 years. And then it was this huge framed thing of basically everything we went to. And the downside of it, she hated it. Oh, she hated it. She thought it was so ugly. Yeah, that's kind of the thing. It's like,
I was about to say, you're going to make all my male listeners, and including myself, feel like shit because I've never done anything that thoughtful.
You know what? It's funny. It was like easy to do because, you know, I just pocketed it and put it aside, but it was like a long-term project. Like, I'm always about the long game, and I think those definitely take a lot more more heart. But yeah, that one I thought was going to go over great, and it was relegated to like the storage room downstairs just because she thought it was ugly. I mean, yeah, it was like, you know, kind of a disaster in terms of, you know, aesthetics. It didn't really fit, but I kind of like that, and that may be why we're getting divorced, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, I think that was definitely one of the things that took the longest, and I thought was pretty thoughtful.
And just so you can picture his creation a little bit better, he says that that collage with about 60 different place cards from all kinds of different events that he and his wife had gone to over the years turned out just smaller than a standard size movie poster, framed poster, with cards of all different shapes, sizes, and colors.
And, you know, she was definitely like kind of humoring me, but not super excited. And because it was framed, you know, glass and all this stuff, she's like, Where are you gonna put this? And that's when I saw, I was like, okay, this one went over like a lead balloon, because she's thinking like, where is this gonna be relegated to? And right, just not her taste. So yeah, I think she definitely tried to humor me and said, oh, I appreciate it, but I think more so she was fearing having to have it somewhere, you know, conspicuous in the house.
So that strikes me as something that, okay, maybe if you had a man cave or something that did look kind of in, you know, pool table, little wet bar,
yep,
pool, you know, dartboard, maybe it could fit down there.
Yep.
But she was worried about, yeah, where the hell are we going
to
put this in?
Where it's going to go. So it definitely reflected. It's funny. It's like I try not to think of it as like there's that episode of The Simpsons where Homer gets Marge a bowling ball,
yeah,
with the name Homer on, yes, it. Yes. And I'm like, did I just get her something that I thought I would like? And then I think about it. I'm like, well, it was an attempt to be like kind of romantic or sentimental, but it just didn't take into account her total style. So I definitely fault myself there. But, you know, overall I thought, yeah, you know, maybe this would be something that I'd go, because she's, I couldn't think of anything to get her. She's a hard day person to get gifts for, obviously.
All right, okay, so I have to probe a little bit on this. Is there anything about that story that is emblematic of this impending divorce?
Absolutely. Oh, for sure.
How so?
I think it's, you know, trying hard, but being too almost like you're the way you are, and the things that are, you know, the things that you like or that are pleasing to you, just because you've got a good nature about it or you've got good intentions, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be the right fit for the other person. And I think that's kind of the whole thing in a microcosm. Like, yeah, this was a really thoughtful, long gift that took a lot of, you know, thought and some effort into it. But at the end of the day, no matter how thoughtful or nice it is, it just might not be the right fit. And you didn't have bad intentions, and you didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but just not a fit.
Right.
So
there was no there was no event that preceded this. This was just a kind of a case of bad match.
You know, I'm thinking it was a 7-year marriage, 10-year relationship, one kid, and I think after having the baby, it kind of exacerbated some real differences of opinion on just day-to-day stuff, and you just kind of reach the point where, you know, it may just not be a good fit to have your lives intertwined day-to-day. You just have different objectives. You want to do things differently. I think, like, you know, I just said, I bought my office building to be closer to home to try to, you know, quell some of the disconnect, but it looks like it was too little too late, so... Mm.
So is it in the works right now? Is it?
Yeah, in the works right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being as friendly as could be, this unconscious or conscious uncoupling.
Right.
Friendly. 10 being War of the Roses or whatever the hell. Where would you rank your situation right now?
I'd say probably a 4.
Okay.
I'm more, I'd say, annoyed than anything, because I feel like I put a lot of effort into trying to at least get to a good place, and I feel like it got, how would I put it, just kind of ignored, so to speak. So, yeah, I mean, we've got a very, very young child. She's a year and a half, so it's definitely something that we've got a lot to consider there, but yeah, I'm not particularly enthused, and yeah, I'm a little pissed off about it, but you know what, that's life. I've come back from worse, so I think it'll be okay in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And if it's not a 7 or 8 or 9, then that really does bode well for the child.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, is that we're both 100% on board with everything with the child. I think it's more just kind of logistics and what the new norm is going to be. And we're both obviously going to have big differences of opinion on what the new norm is going to be. And I think that's going to be something that will take a lot of getting used to. But, you know, that's life. They say half of marriages end in divorce, and sometimes you just wake up and say, look, I'm just another statistic. Nothing particularly unique and nothing special about this this disintegration. Just is what it is.
I have a 1.5-year-old as well, so I know that at least the parenting territory that you're in right now. Is there anything... I know you're in the midst of it right now, but any lessons learned, any perspective that you have that you didn't before, or takeaways?
I've been listening to a lot more music than I remember before, and, you know, as you get older, song lyrics start affecting you in different ways. So what was the song I was listening to... Who was it? It was Ricky Nelson, Garden Party. It's a great old song. And let's say you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
But it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. See, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
Man, that, you know, that really, really says it all, because you can spend a lot of time. It's funny, your question was, what was the most thoughtful thing you did? And I don't want to, like, you know, take a dump on everybody trying to be thoughtful or romantic, but, like, while you're doing that, just know you can't please everybody. So at the end of the day, you got to make sure you please yourself. That's definitely my takeaway from reflecting on everything. I feel like I set up a whole lot to make things as nice and copacetic and, yeah, have a 4-block commute to see my family. But at the end of the day, you've got to kind of look out for number one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I completely agree with that. It's like, if you're not looking out for yourself, you're never going to be that great husband, great father, whatever it is, if you're bending over backwards, contorting your life completely
right
around other people's needs and not your own.
Right.
Yeah.
That's definitely an important thing to look at, and I'm kind of, you know, what, 37 now, so I'm kind of at a point where still got a couple of good decades ahead, hopefully, knock on wood. But, yeah, I'm starting to really take that to heart and know that it's an important thing.
I know nothing about this topic, but I also feel like with your child so young, it's not going to be like a slow peel of the Band-Aid
in
like the middle school when, like, it traumatizes kids, you know?
I am thankful. I mean, it happened to me when I was 3. My parents split up when I was 3 years old, and so I have no recollection. I'm just right here on the corner, right behind the dental spa. So that's kind of what I'm hoping is the same thing here.
Well, thank you for sharing.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
I appreciate your feedback on the video.
I'm kind of a hard on the sleeve guy, so for better or for worse. But good luck with all you're doing. I appreciate you having me.
Good luck to you too.
Thanks.
Good luck getting through this this period, and
you got it.
I'm sure good things are in store.
Thanks. I appreciate you saying that.
Take care.
Coming up, my unusual Monday morning continues.
As I like to tell people who are coming here for the first time, they're like, what is this place? I'm like, this is where I'm taking you to murder you.
Lured to a part of Chicago I never knew existed.
Smells like wood!
And an inside look at a fascinating career.
I am 40 years old, and I have been a professional circus performer my entire life.
That's ahead, but first, I need to pause for just a moment to tell you about one of the sponsors that is making it possible for me to bring you Backseat Rider for free each week, and that is Blue Apron. My longtime listeners know that I've been cooking with Blue Apron since well before I started this podcast. We absolutely love it, my wife and I, because it saves us trips to the grocery. It's just as cost effective as grocery shopping for us because you get all the ingredients in just the right amounts that you need. You don't waste anything. And the meals are fun to prepare, and they almost always surprise us with how good they taste. So if you haven't already, try Blue Apron. Try it for free. Blue Apron is treating Backseat Rider listeners to their first dinner. That is a $30 value if you visit blueapron.com/backseat. And among the many recipes being offered this month, chili butter steaks with lemon parmesan broccoli and potatoes, creamy tomato pasta with mushrooms and collard greens. So yeah, check out this week's menu. Get $30 off with free shipping by just going to blueapron.com/backseat. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hey everybody, it's Chad Prather here, the guy that's unapologetically Southern on YouTube. Join me every Thursday for the Chad Prather Show exclusively here on Podcast One. I'm bringing armchair philosophy and observational humor to what's going on in the world as guests help me sort it all out. Nothing is off limits on the Chad Prather Show. Again, every Thursday, it's new episodes of the Chad Prather Show right here on Podcast One. Download and listen to new episodes exclusively on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
After I dropped off the lawyer, I stopped for a quick cup of coffee in Roscoe Village, and then I got a ride request from just a few blocks away. Pulled up to the apartment building, and this guy, who looked to be about my age, late 30s, early 40s, big smile on his face, he started walking toward the car with a big bucket of tools in his right hand. And after a quick friendly wave, he opened the trunk of my car, threw the tools in, and then, unlike most passengers, he sat up front, shotgun, right next to me.
I'd rather jump in the front if somebody seems like they've got a good personality and just have a conversation with you because, hey, we're going to spend 15 or 20 minutes of our life together. We might as well learn something new from each other. So,
since people rarely ever sit shotgun, didn't have a microphone up there, but luckily I had a spare in the glove box.
Can you think of the most thoughtful or a thoughtful gift that you have either given or received?
Let's see. I'll say the gift I've given, or actually I'm about to give, is one that we're going to send to some friends of ours who are who just got married a year ago, and instead of buying them something off their registry that, you know, you're going to be, oh, hey, great, I got that bowl that, you know, I registered for, because you need bowls, evidently, when you get married, was a game, actually, and it was a wooden game. It's called Shut the Box, and I had seen it at a restaurant, and it's super simple. It's a, like, you can make them into a cigar boxes, but I built one out of wood, and basically it has anywhere from 9 to 12 little flip paddles on a rod.
Couldn't envision the game itself based on his description, but suffice to say, it was a creative homemade gift, and that seemed to fit for a guy who traveled with a bucket of tools, right? And creativity started to emerge even more as a theme during this ride.
Now, is this a trend for you and your wife that you go off registry and do something kind of more thoughtful?
Yes, and this actually started with probably one of the most thoughtful gifts I'll say we received. And it was at our, when we got married 9 years ago, so we're actually a year away from getting to utilize this this gift, and that was a friend of ours who bought us, you know, probably about a $30, $40 bottle of wine, but they put a tag on it, and they specifically bought a bottle of wine that would mature in 10 years. And they put a tag on it saying, hey, this is a wine that's best drunk after 10 years. And so keep it in your cellar, keep, you know, wherever you keep your wine, and on your 10-year anniversary, we want you to enjoy this and think about us and our friendship. And I thought that was the awesomest thing, and we've actually started doing that for a lot of people, where we buy them that, because it's still, you know, it's a nice gift, but it's really one of those, like, you have to let it pay off in the future. So I loved that idea.
At that point, we hopped on the expressway, so we're headed back south to what looked on Google Maps to be Chinatown, but I didn't recognize the street name that he punched in as the destination. He told me we were headed to where he keeps some sort of makeshift pontoon boat right near the Chicago River, and apparently the tools he had with him were to make some repairs on this boat. And as we were passing downtown, it was to our left, the conversation took an unexpected turn.
I am 40 years old, and I have been a professional circus performer my entire life.
Your entire life?
My entire life. I grew up as a kid, totally normal family. I grew up in California. Mom was a teacher, and my dad worked for a computer company. And when I was 13 years old, a friend's mom brought me to go see Cirque du Soleil. And I fell in love with it and found out there was a school up in Montreal. And I moved to Montreal and spent... That's all good. just literally just a bucket of stuff.
Okay.
But no, so I moved up to Montreal when I graduated high school, and I spent 2 years at a circus school up there called the National Circus School of Montreal, and I've been performing ever since then. I do acrobatic bicycle, and I do handstands on chairs, and I juggle, and I play the accordion and ukulele, and all sorts of randomness. I mean,
he's done halftime shows at major sporting events like Bulls games. He's worked on cruise ships. He's traveled basically the world performing in the last 20 years. And one of his signature acts is just him and a bicycle.
You know, my butt is on the seat facing the handlebars, and my chest is facing the back of the bike, and my hands are holding the handlebars, and my feet are stretched out behind me, and you can also ride it like a unicycle. You can stand on the seat and the handlebars and ride forward or backwards. You can stand on the handlebars, ride forwards or backwards, and then there's all sorts of spinning, turning tricks you do as well. So it's all on the ground. It's not on a tight wire, and yeah, it's a ton of fun.
Well, have you ever embarrassingly messed up?
I'll say the worst act I have ever had when I was doing my bike act was one of my first public shows. I was out in San Francisco doing a circus, and I think I had about 18 tricks in my act at this time, and something happened in my first trick or two where I fell, and I get back up on the bike, and I start riding, and nothing's going right from this point forward. And I'm not hurt. Nothing's wrong with me.
Yeah.
I cannot, I'm, you know, you got that little bit of nerves and jitters, and I cannot for the life of me figure out what it is that's going wrong, but out of 18 or so tricks in my act, three of them went right. Like, I literally messed up 15 of 18 tricks. And this isn't a show that people had paid tickets to go see. So, needless to say, I was like, oh, this is brutal. But I don't know if I was at that show or one thereafter where somebody gave me the wise words of wisdom, which is, you know, if you perform your entire life, you're going to probably do, you know, 5 to 10,000 shows. So what's the worst thing that happens if you have one or two absolutely horrible out of 10,000? That still means you have, you know, 9,998 other good ones.
We pulled off the expressway into Bridgeport, which is the near South Side neighborhood where the White Sox play. And after driving a few blocks, we turned onto this street that led underneath I-55 and then emerged at this huge industrial lot that I never knew was there. And I'd say it was a good 10 acres of undeveloped land. It was right on the south branch of the Chicago River with this full view of the Chicago skyline.
She taught we're basically going to that little silver car right there.
Got it.
As I like to tell people who are coming here for the first time, they're like, what is this place? I'm like, this is where I'm taking you to murder you.
You're
like,
not about to murder
yeah, me. No, the number one comment everyone makes is like, am I going to make it out of here alive? And it's like, yeah, totally.
We pulled into the lot through an open gate and were surrounded on one side by all kinds of open space. And then on the other side, this cluster of shipping containers, those same kind of shipping containers that you see on those big transcontinental barges. Three of those containers were pushed together into this triangle. And in the middle of the triangle, it was like a little courtyard, a little makeshift courtyard. There was a wood-burning stove that had been fashioned from a propane tank. And it was burning in full force. You could smell the wood. It smelled really good, actually. And then inside one of those shipping containers, my passenger's friend was hard at work.
This is a guy who also makes custom leather bike seats, like saddles, you know, legit old-school style-looking ones, makes them by hand, and... But yeah, so we've been playing around, and he helped me, I'll say, more than I did anything for him. He helped me to build this little stove over here that's going to be just a wood-burning stove.
I'm gonna get out here.
Yeah, man. Yeah, for real.
Here, let me turn this
What's
off.
Your name, by the way?
Anthony.
Sorry.
Anthony? Yeah.
Matt.
All right.
Smells like wood!
I checked out the workshop, which was full of all kinds of metal parts and raw leather materials, and I then learned their plan for that Monday afternoon, which, by the way, was unseasonably warm.
We're going to take my world's shittiest pontoon boat out on the water and then winterize it when we're done.
So with most of the city tucked away into their cubicles and offices around town, these two guys were about to take some beers out onto the south branch of the Chicago River. Not a bad way to spend a Monday.
We might need to take a picture out here.
Oh, no, great.
Is that all right?
Absolutely, man. Great.
I got back into the car, and I had time for one last ride. And the request came in from Chinatown, which was the next neighborhood over. So I pull up to this block. It's got a number of modest homes and apartment buildings on it. And a petite woman she looked to be in her early 20s, approached the car. And it turns out this woman is a self-proclaimed nihilist who rejected my first question about gifts because she no longer believes gifts, thoughtful or otherwise, have any meaning.
Just, I'm a nihilist. I don't think that anything matters, just existentially.
Can you explain that? Okay, so for people who don't know what nihilism is, my understanding is nihilism means belief in nothing. Is that accurate?
There's different ways of going about it. My understanding of it is the belief that nothing outside of humans matters, and then even intersubjectively, I don't think that we can construct anything that would matter.
Okay. Outside of humans?
Yes.
So humans matter?
Yeah, well, it could if we wanted them to. That would be the intersubjective belief.
What does intersubjective mean?
It would be a belief within ourselves. So, like, within your family, you could have, like, your own constructed beliefs.
Okay.
That would only matter, like, to your core group. So, like, the idea that gender is a social construct, like, maybe gender doesn't exist, but it exists because we think that it does. That would be the idea that, like, morality doesn't exist outside of humans, but it exists because we think that it does.
I was having trouble following her, but I'm pretty sure the essence of what she's talking about is, why should anything, like morals or values or gifts, why should any of that matter if they're just contrived things that were conjured up by humans? Humans being a species that, in universe terms, is arguably insignificant.
What got you into this nihilism? Was it a book that you said?
It wasn't that originally. I was raised extremely religiously, first off, and I just didn't believe that myself, so I started questioning that when I was rather young, and then I just started questioning more and more social norms and more and what people was saying mattered to them until I just started questioning the entirety of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I started pursuing books and people who were saying the thoughts that I had.
And so you related a lot to what you read, or you've related a lot to this school of thought.
Mm-hmm.
So do you mind if I ask what your religious foundation was when you were little?
Fundamentalist Christian.
Oh, okay. Did you grow up here in Chicago?
No, back in a suburb of St. Louis.
Okay. And how old were you when you started questioning everything?
Maybe 12.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what spurred the first thought, like, hey, there's cracks in this belief system?
It didn't make sense for some people to be born into countries where they were clearly not going to discover Jesus. Like, that seemed to just be a rigged system where those people would just end up going to hell. Mm-hmm. And so I started questioning that, and no one had answers for it. And then I started questioning, in the fundamentalist Christianity, there's creationism, and there's often a lot of very strict gender norms, and I started questioning all of that as well.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on gender now? Do you feel like, because like a lot of people are going to argue with what you said, gender is this construct of the mind, because they'll say biologically speaking, men anatomically are different than women.
Yeah, and that can be true, but then there's a bunch of other constructs, like that women are supposed to be in the kitchen, like in the 50s, for instance, or that men are smarter, or women can't be firefighters, or women shouldn't be in the army. You know, a ton of other things that go along with it that are probably more constructed than are true,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. And some things that don't match up in different cultures that we definitely believe in America that seem to be more constructed. So, like, I definitely go back and forth on whether I even think that gender is real because we think that it's real. Like, does it make sense for me to, like, recognize the semantic distinction of gender? So, I just really don't care anymore.
I dropped her off downtown and turned off the Lyft app. Never would have guessed that a Monday shift, Monday of all days, would lead me to a circus performer, a tooth Samaritan, and a nihilist. But I'm glad it happened. And as I was driving home, and this happens quite a bit, even though it wasn't me doing it, it just gave me this comfort knowing that not everyone in Chicago was cooped up in an office the Monday after Thanksgiving, that there were two free spirits chugging down the south branch of the river on a dilapidated pontoon boat drinking beers, and that someone somewhere in Chicago was about to be reunited with their lost tooth. All right, before I sign off for the week, a couple of housekeeping things. If you do want to take a look at the picture that I took with the circus performer, check out my social media. I'm at Anthony Ponce on Facebook and Anthony Ponce TV on Instagram. And my last name is spelled P-O-N-C-E. And I've also linked to his website, the circus performer's website, in the show notes. So check it out if you want to see some of his performances. Also, Lyft is not a sponsor of this show, has nothing to do with the content, but if you haven't signed up for Lyft yet, want to help me out, sign up for Lyft and use my promo code. It is Backseat Rider, all one word, just the name of this podcast, Backseat Rider, and that is good for new users of the Lyft app for $50 in free ride credit. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin. And also thank you so much to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. You can look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and make sure that you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts.